Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are the Roanoke Collaborative Project. We are a diverse group of civic-minded persons in the Roanoke Valley. We honestly believe that you can actually have constructive conversations around some of the toughest issues, and we are spending our time with you trying to prove that over and over again, that no matter how tough and polarizing things can be, we can have constructive conversations. Today we have with us in this conversation, Dr. Dana Ackley, who is president of EQ Leaders. We have William Fralin, CEO of Retirement Unlimited. Jay Foster, president and CEO of Flexmetrics. Lee Learman, dean of Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine. Cynthia Lawrence, Carilion Clinic Director of Office of Workforce Development. Wayne Strickland, retired CEO of Roanoke Valley Allegheny Regional Commission, and Bill Lee, retired pastor in the Valley.
When Andrew Block headed Virginia's Department of Juvenile Justice, he noted that kids were more likely to have serious legal problems if they carried a gun, and in some communities that was quite common. Now a professor at UVA's law school, he heads a clinic that does research and advises state and local government. He, his students, and staff reached out to about 60 people, many of them under the age of 25, to find out why they felt the need for a weapon.
You don't want to be perceived as weak or soft, and you also want to show that you're someone not to be messed with.
Young people also felt fear and wanted a gun for self-defense. Acquiring one was easy, and the internet told them what they needed to know.
How to buy a gun, how to use a gun, it's cool to have a gun.
And social media played a toxic role.
Some little beef gets brought online, and then you have a much broader audience, and people sadly are not really violence interrupters online. They're escalators.
This problem, Block says, is not widespread. It's concentrated in predominantly Black communities with relatively high rates of crime, and officials are already trying to address it.
Local governments in the Hampton Roads area, in the Richmond area, Charlottesville, Roanoke, Danville, are all often with state support devoting resources to these very specific neighborhoods and communities where gun violence is the biggest problem. And the good news, it seems to be having a positive effect. Gun violence is going down, or has been going down, since it peaked during the pandemic.
The report provides support for continued efforts. And while the number of people interviewed is statistically small, the answers Block and his team got were powerful.
We could have just looked at academic literature and data, but to me, research of this kind has an extra power to it because you're talking about the people who are experiencing the problems, and you can use their voices and perspectives to inform our thinking about how we can tackle these persistent and challenging issues.
Among other things, the report, entitled In Their Own Voices, suggests Virginia's new governor should invest more in gun violence prevention and limit access to firearms. At the local level, communities should provide more safe places where young people can hang out.
At the end of the day, it's not that complicated. They need to feel safe, and they need to feel connected, and they need to feel supported. And if we can make young people feel that way and believe that they don't have to carry a gun to protect themselves, then all kinds of good things are possible.
Communities might also encourage partnerships between people with so-called lived experience and police, teach kids and young adults to make better decisions, offer mentoring services, and help young people to think more critically about the dangers of social media. I'm Sandy Hausman.
All right. So quite an interesting report there for our first show here. Initial reactions, anybody? Anybody have any sort of initial reaction to that? What's changed? What's changed over the last couple of years where this has become even more of a problem back when we thought it couldn't be any worse? But any ideas on that?
Well, for whatever reason, they appear to feel less safe. And if we could figure out what is triggering their sense of vulnerability, maybe we could come up with some good answers.
Yeah. It strikes me, if you live in a neighborhood where gun violence happens often, that you would naturally feel less safe, and that you would want some kind of protection. And maybe we've got a cycle going where, because we can't protect people, they're going to do it themselves.
I don't know.
No, the report talked about social media, and I think there is a big problem with that in our society.
How so, Wayne?
Well, when you get social media is so easy to get on, and you can look at it and you can say anything you want to say. And so people build fears up, or they talk about how they're going to get involved in some gang or do whatever. And yeah, it's just there all the time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to contradict it on social media necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Social media also provides an opportunity to be in a communication silo. So you can be escalating a point with people of like mind, and before you know it, you've got a real polarization going on unintentionally. But I also wonder about the mention of the communities across the Commonwealth, where there are statistics showing that gun violence is down right now. I wonder what the dynamics are in law enforcement or community mentoring are leading to some of these statistics that we see being counterbalanced by anecdotal information or information from the street that we're getting. So I wonder if a decline in the number of police personnel, you know, there are workforce shortages across all industries, and I know that we have a real talent shortage in law enforcement, and there's a real push on to try to encourage people to get into those professions and related professions. I wonder if there's some sort of dynamic here going on.
Well, Cynthia, there could be, in that the numbers apparently spiked during COVID,
right,
and are coming down now. And of course, during COVID, the interactions between the community and police officers was down because obviously people were trying not to interact with each other. So maybe there's something there. Lee, did you have something you want to do?
I did. Cynthia, you mentioned statistics and you mentioned solutions. And my first impression hearing the story was that the story turned something which could be considered a statistic into a human story around a local community listening to their youth and as individuals and collectively to understand why, what are for them the dynamics that lead them to carry a weapon, and use those to devise different counter strategies that were potentially implemented locally. I love that degree of ownership by the local community to take care of its children and its individuals, moving beyond statistics to local solutions. Sometimes the statistics can be overwhelming. The escalation that occurs of these communications through social media just seems something like we can't really surmount. But when we talk about our own children in our own community and really focus on what they're telling us and use trusted leaders to talk, to mentor them, that seems to me to provide some hope in an otherwise challenging situation.
So, Lee, I think what I hear you saying is that the local involvement may be important. And it struck me when I heard about more money to be spent on programs and programming. To me, not understanding what that actually might be, Bill, you may have some insight into this that we don't have in terms of how the sort of national programs or the state programs work in the African-American community to sort of try to address a problem like this.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing for me, this has to do with housing, it has to do with unemployment, upper mobility. It has to do with a lot of things. I find it interesting if you look at the numbers, at least the numbers I see, in a particular area, especially in Roanoke, they say Northwest. But if you zero and drill down, 90% of any gun violence is done in a certain area. It's not Northwest.
Just a small part of Northwest.
But there's a large concentration of poverty, unemployment, and drug activity, which are all fuels for gun violence. I speak for this personally. I have a person very dear to me. When I saw his pistol for the first time, I said, "When did you get this?" Now, this is not somebody out yonder. This is a person that's part of my family. I won't detail it any further at this point. But he was at that point just turned 21. He was not in drugs. He was not in a gang. I said, but why do you need this gun?
What did he tell you?
He said, Pops, I got to protect myself, because he goes into those environments. His friends are in that environment, and he feels a need to have an equalizer. That's his term. I need an equalizer. And it's not a good equalizer for me, but that's where he is.
Wow, that's a powerful story, Bill. I tell you, you know, I also think, to Wayne's point, there's some social media going on here. I mean, when I was a kid, you got bullied on the playground, and then when you got home, you didn't have to get worried about being bullied anymore. But now, as kids scroll through social media all the time,
they're getting bullied.
Right, and there's not much escape from that, it seems like. I don't know if that plays a role into this or not. Jay, you're a tech entrepreneur. Explain yourself.
I don't think I can explain that. No, I like how Lee put this as far as the human side of the story versus the statistical side and looking at the data. But as you all know, I like data. And when I think about Roanoke City, which is really one of the things we want to talk about, the homicide rate in Roanoke City was something above 20 per 100,000, which is significantly higher than the national average. So we have a gun problem here, and it's gotten better. But the question I have is, why is Roanoke's gun violence so high? And then this story is highlighting that even more guns are going to be on the streets with youth, which doesn't bode well for the future of gun violence in Roanoke. So how do you get your arms around that problem and try to find a solution?
Which is interesting, Jay. Again, I will tell you that probably two pockets in Roanoke where those numbers cause be high. It's not Roanoke proper. It gets concentrated in certain places, Southeast, Northwest. But then you just can't say Southeast. You got to find those places. And again, poverty, unemployment, and probably some drug activity.
Hopelessness breeds violence.
Yeah, perfect storm.
I had the opportunity to interact with the police chief in Charleston, South Carolina. And he was the police chief when the young man, now this is an adult story, but the young man murdered those eight black church people. And so the police chief is under the gun because he can easily imagine Charleston just blowing up. And he made contact with the black community and had a chance to talk with this man too. The leader that he connected with, he called himself Papa Smurf, and he was a convicted felon. And he worked with, and he helped the black community work with the white police chief and the police department. And they were able, through trust, which Lee, that's what you mentioned, trusted leaders, were able to keep the violence from exploding in reaction to that incident.
Just for our listeners, you're talking about Lee Learman, not Bill Lee.
Too many Lees.
Right. You know, it strikes me, Danny, when you're talking about that and what Bill was saying, that this is almost, it sounds like a location problem. Like that you could pinpoint the locations, and those locations are not safe spaces. And how do you turn those locations into safe places? Excuse me.
Yeah. So you change the clientele and make it more diverse. Mm. To make it more diverse, you've got to then change the landscape. So change those places to a place where everybody want to live, as opposed to only a few people kind of should live. There's a place here called Ashton Heights. It used to be called Carew Apartments. I've gone in and out of there many a time in my years as pastor, always with fear and trembling. When I was with Chip, our workers had to go into Carew, gunfire, scary stuff. But everybody who lives in Carew, they have the same financial situation. There's no upward mobility. So if we could somehow mix things up, I'm really radical in my thinking. I think they'd go and bulldoze the whole thing and make it a more diverse place where people, and it's a mobile place. You start here, but you're on your way somewhere else. This is not your destination. And so you end up in Lansdowne, you end up in Lincoln Terrace. Lincoln Terrace has shifted. But you end up, these become destination places, and you keep breeding persons who are on the low end of the totem pole, who fight every day just to exist. It breeds violence. There's no way around it. It breeds violence.
You said where people should live. I hear you saying that's the only place people can live.
It is.
And Bill, question for you about, and to you, Lee Learman. We are thinking about the community coming together to address this issue. And you're talking about perhaps mixing things up, creating diversity, and the physical structure. So there's an investment implied in that. How can we bring the right folks together to help solve this problem?
Well,
she just asked you to solve gun violence here.
That's right.
30 seconds.
Cynthia, do you mean who should be at the table?
Yes. Who should be at the table? It sounds like we need some thinkers here about physical structure, about opportunity, about investment.
Well, when Susan Williams was killed in Crystal Springs, there were people who gathered, but it was people who had the same perfect affinity group. This group needs, gosh, if I say this out loud, I got to say it out loud. NAACP is good, SCLC, all that's good, but you've got to find the people in these housing developments. There's some Papa Smurfs in all of them. I know a lot of them. Here's the hard part. Getting them to come outside of their comfort zone and run the risk of telling us things that they're not sure won't end up getting them ostracized. I can name you about 8 guys. They're all ex-felons, but they're the Papa Smurfs. There's a group here that they go, they sweep Lansdowne every night. And they can do it.
You say they sweep it. What sweep it?
They have a van. They actually drive through and check to make sure no negative activity is going on in Lansdowne. They do it every night.
That's so community policing.
They do it.
Interesting.
And I'm blessed that they trust me enough to hang out.
So what about, one of the things that strikes me is for a long time, the city was in denial, basically, about whether we had gangs or not. And I think we've come, from what I understand from the news media, we've come to the conclusion, yes, we do. And I'm curious if anybody has any knowledge or opinion about whether that plays into this and how.
Yeah. Go ahead, Wayne.
I'm not sure there's any facts there, but I think what young people are looking for is belonging. And if they can't belong or tie into the family structure or clubs or whatever in the area, they'll look for a gang. And, you know, we just recently had the shooting downtown Roanoke on Campbell Avenue, and it was 2 different gangs kind of shooting at each other. And they talk about the Crips and all those and the Bloods.
We did something last night. When I say we, I was part of it. There was a basketball game, first game of the season between the girls, Patrick Henry and William Fleming. This is always big deal. Fleming, PH. And
is that a rivalry, Bill?
Yeah, it's a show enough rivalry. So I have a member who is the coach of the Fleming's girls. And so he called me. He said, do you think we could get the Divine Nine to come to the game, sit all over the place, and then at halftime with their fraternity and sorority paraphernalia, come onto the floor? We did. I think there were about 75 of us at the game. I think everybody was super proud that there was not the normal agitating back and forth because there were so many of us there. and all these gray-haired people.
Just for our listeners, not for me, because I certainly understand it. What's the Divine Nine?
The Divine Nine are the first nine African-American fraternities and sororities. I happen to be one who is in the original 1906. David Points and I are both members of AFIA, Alpha Phi Alpha, formed in Cornell University. But very civic, trying to help kids do well. So they saw all of us. Divine Nines are all college graduates, all professional persons, who really try. So we had all of that on the floor. We're saying we need to do more of that so the kids see us. Let me just say further, I'm trying to get that same group to work with Cynthia and me to get our kids engaged in health careers. Anybody, you have to be blind, crazy, or lost in Roanoke not realize this is where it is. And so I'm trying to say to the kids, we don't want you to become a CNA and stop there. The pathway. And I think we'd be on to something. I think the gun violence, a lot of stuff will shift if we can keep pushing that. Just one piece.
You're right. And being in the business where we hire CNAs, you know, I can't tell how many times people have started at that level. And Cynthia, you probably agree with that too.
Yeah.
That they thrive and then they go on to school and they move up.
Absolutely. And their employers will help them.
So we've got about 5 minutes left, so I don't want to leave anybody out. Does anybody have anything they're burning to contribute to the conversation?
Well, I would add one.
There we go.
One thing to the group, Bill. When Cynthia asked you who should be there, I think we need some of those kids with guns there. I hope they don't bring their guns, but I would like to see them in the conversation.
Bill, I was when you were talking, I was reminded about the relationship between loneliness and identity and belonging. And there's a loneliness epidemic in our society at every age group, with disproportionality with youth and with youth that are from underrepresented minority groups in medicine and in healthcare. So we see loneliness as an epidemic, which is not an equal opportunity problem. And so with that, these youth are looking for identities, and the gangs are a set of identities that provide safety and protection in some contexts. And what I heard you saying is that there are a whole bunch of other identities that can be elevated within the community and for those of us who support the pathways into health careers as an example of that.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice that the gang that they would choose is a gang to become a physician?
Yeah.
A gang to become a radiologist, a gang to become gainfully employed, don't have to look over your shoulder every night wherever somebody's going to get you. Lee, I think we on the precipice of that. I think we are close to it. Just got to keep building these bridges. Got to help.
And I think that's what can make Roanoke unique. And that's the thing that we've talked about more than once is what's the vision for Roanoke? It's a place where that can happen, but you got to be intentional about it. And you have to get people at the table that want to see that happen.
Absolutely. I think it strikes me that community gathering where you made an intentional effort, Bill, you and the Magnificent Nine?
The Divine Nine.
Divine Nine. Oh, right.
We're magnificent.
It wasn't
better. You might be magnificent, but you're divine. You know, that is the kind of thing that I think deals with safe spaces. It deals with communication. It is ironic that in an age where we have the ability to communicate more easily with each other than we ever have, we communicate in a poor manner and less, really.
Yeah. One of the persons there last night, some of you will know the name Harvey Brookins. Mm-hmm. Harvey's a banker. He's now in Blacksburg. He started here. But Harvey is also a referee. He referees girls' games. And for folks to say, huh? Yeah, he's a banker. He's a member of a fraternity. But he's also a referee, and he cares about all of you. I know some folks, this sounds so simplistic. It is. We just have to somehow structure it and be consistent with it and have some stories that we can have them tell. I was here. I got hooked up here. I'm here now. And we keep doing that. The more stories, I think that we get a train of folk moving out of tough situations. But it takes a while.
Well, Bill, I appreciate that. I think we're about at the time to wrap. So I want to let our listeners know this is, again, it's a project of the Roanoke, this is a production of the Roanoke Collaboration Project in conjunction with WVTF and Radio Melrose. I want to thank Dr. Points for his sponsorship of this. And we hope to have a continuing conversation about issues that affect the community. And the idea is we're going to gather once a week and comment on stories that are in the news. And this one happened to come up. So with that, are there any last sort of thoughts before we sign off? Okay. Well, I'm William Fralin, and I appreciate everybody listening.